Welcome in to the latest edition of College Golf Talk. I'm Brentley, and missing this week is my good pal, Steve Burkowski. But never fear, I have a special guest, special co-host, and I wanted to get someone, since this is our annual March Madness preview episode, I wanted to get a co-host who knew ball. And not that Burko doesn't, but he did pick Michigan State to win it all last week, so I guess we could be eating crow on that, but I think we'll be okay. But just wanted to welcome in Cannon Claycomb, who those of you who follow college golf closely will recognize his name. He played 3.5 years at Alabama, 4.5 years at Alabama, Cannon. Is that right?
Yeah, 4.5.
The good old COVID-19 pandemic extra year. Well, I wanted to get Cannon on just because not only does he know college hoops, but he also still keeps an eye on college golf as well, so I figured he'd be perfect. So Cannon, before we dive into these mini results that we have, what kind of give us maybe a spin through of what you've been up to with your game, where you've been playing, and how things are going?
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me on. I'm happy to be back on College Golf Talk. I graduated in May of last year. I was 14th or 15th on PGA Tour University, so maybe a little farther back than that. I can't remember, but it gave me status. Yeah. Yeah. In my mind, it keeps going lower and lower, but got immediate status out in PGA Americas, which was the Canada swing for us right out of school. Didn't play my best up in Canada, but learned a lot. It was nice to travel around, and then went to DP Q school, DP World Tour Q school, made it to second stage there, which was really cool. Got to go to Austria and Spain for that. And then obviously got into Korn Ferry second stage as well and was able to play that. And didn't get any status through any of those places. It turns out it's really hard to play professional golf. It's not as easy as some of my competitors made it look right out of school. But I'm about to go back down to Latin America for the second half of the PGA Americas season. Which I didn't even realize was a benefit of PGA Tour University till a couple weeks ago. So gearing up for that, excited for it, excited for every opportunity, and we're just taking it one day at a time.
Yeah, they keep sweetening the pot as it relates to PGA Tour U. I think 2 or 3 years ago, you would have been SOL right now with no status anywhere, but credit to Brendan Van Doren and the team at PGA Tour U for adding things to the pipeline and giving you guys places to play. Before we get into the results, what's one thing that I know this is kind of a cliche question, but what's one aspect of professional golf, maybe specifically, that no one told you that you found out for yourself was a little bit more difficult than you would have realized?
Yeah, I think for me and a lot of guys that, have came out of PGA Tour University in the last couple of years is, when you're on PGA Tour University, you're usually at a bigger program and we're playing really hard golf courses, to be honest. And I think over the 4 years that I was in school, I got really good at shooting like 3, 4, 5, 6 under for a week, which would be 1 or 2 a day. And when you're playing Olympia Fields, like 2 under is great. But we got I got thrust into that Canada status where it's, if you don't shoot 6 under a day, you're kind of getting lapped. And I think that was a different thing for me that I didn't adjust to well. It's not an excuse. Like, the golf courses are still hard and you have to hit really good shots and play well. But there were a lot more birdie opportunities and kind of that mindset switch of like, hey, if you shoot 2 under today, you help the team, you have a good day, a good week. Whereas now in Canada, you got to go shoot 5, 6, 7, sometimes 8 under a day to contend for a tournament. So just a little bit of an adjustment thing that I didn't do a very good job of in my first season. But I think that's been the biggest difference between me and some of the guys I played against in college.
People don't realize just how great of golf courses college golfers, at least at a high level, play comparatively to the PGA Tour. Because no knock on PGA Tour courses, but most of them wouldn't, hold a candle to some of the courses that you guys play.
Yeah.
Whether it's, like you said, Olympia Fields, Paso Tiempo, which we're going to televise the Western Intercollegiate here in a few weeks, and Palma Valley, which is a course that a lot of people may not have heard of. Loyola Marymount hosts the Palma Valley Invitational, which is a relatively new event, and got a great field this year, this week, in LSU, running away with the title, 10 shots over University of Texas, which the Longhorns have been red hot here recently. Oklahoma State, Illinois, Tennessee round out the top five, and some big names. Ole Miss continuing kind of the downward trend since being the top-ranked team in the country after the fall. They're sixth. Oklahoma, my pick in the preseason to win the NCAA title, they're eighth. And then Arizona State, number two in the country, tied for ninth with Georgia Tech, San Diego State, SMU 13th. So loaded field. Some of the probably the teams that we're going to be seeing in match play here at Omni La Costa here in a couple of months. Individually, Christian Moss from Texas, he edges out, get clean by a shot after Jace Summey of Oklahoma doubles his last hole. So, Cannon, what was the big thing for Alabama when you guys would go and play these kind of loaded field events? Was it more pressure because, you know, you wanted to show out and beat all these teams? Or was it less because from a ranking standpoint, you could still finish fifth or sixth and still gain a lot?
Yeah, I think it's less pressure as a player. You're going up against the best teams in the country. You know, it's not a ranking game. I thought the hardest places to play for us were when we went and played like South Alabama's tournament and we were the only team in the top 30. And that's not a dig at South Alabama at all. It was a great tournament, but you have to win that event as a team or you severely suffer the consequences. And I think a field like this or the Cabo Collegiate or something like that is always a good test moving in, especially in the spring, moving into conference championship, moving into national championship and regionals. But yeah, I think this is a really cool event. This is a new one. We never played this one. Really impressed by LSU. The new coach there has done a really good job taking over that program and getting it kind of back to where it needs to be, in my opinion. 27 under as a team is really good. Great performance by Algot, I believe is how you say it.
Algot clean, yeah.
Algot, yeah. And then, you know, they had three players finish inside the top five. So, and four players finish inside the top 20. So really good showing from LSU. I think this is a good place for the team to be in. And yeah.
I would imagine when you were doing your recruiting process, not that you didn't want to go anywhere but Alabama, but I would imagine at that time LSU was probably considered one of the powers in the SEC at that time. Would that be correct?
Yeah, absolutely. When I got recruited, I did my LSU and Alabama visit back to back, and they were the last two schools I visited. So they were very high up on my list. And Philip Barbary at the time was at LSU, who as a junior golfer I adored. I thought he was like amazing and such a good person. So yeah, it was LSU was definitely up there. And it's an awesome campus. It just wasn't for me, but I can totally see why people would want to go to LSU to play golf.
I feel like if you could bottle up Philip Barbary's putter and your short game, I don't think it would matter how you would hit the ball tee to green. I think you'd have a pretty good shot of having a pretty good career. But specifically for LSU, just to kind of piggyback on what you said, I mean, they beat the numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5 teams in the country this week. Probably, or not probably, for sure, Jake Amos's best win in his first year at LSU. I know they won their first of the year Tennessee's event, but not nearly the type of field here. So I really feel like at this point, Auburn has established themselves as the number one team. LSU is definitely in the conversation for a team that could make the national championship. Florida State, another one of those teams. I know they were not in this field, but this kind of leads me to my next discussion with Luke Clanton, because if you look at the individual leaderboard from Palma Valley, some of the player of the year candidates did not play well. Jose Ballester outside the top 30 for the second straight event. Michael Lasasso, still no top 10s yet this spring. And so that very much leaves a Luke Clanton, who's fifth in the rankings right now, who's missed a couple of starts playing professionally. He's right in that player of the year raced with David Ford from North Carolina. So that's something to kind of keep an eye out. And before we move on to our next event, Cannon, this was kind of a topic of conversation all last week during the Players' Championship. And I know you have some opinions on it, but Luke Potter, Texas junior who won the Haight last week, obviously got into a little bit of an incident with Rory McIlroy during the Tuesday practice round, said something that was described as a heckle. I still don't think we know exactly what was said, but clearly something was said that prompted Rory McIlroy to waltz on over to Luke and his teammate and ask for his teammate's phone, takes that away. Long story short, both Longhorns ended up getting kicked out of the tournament. Luke has to apologize, sends apology letters to multiple parties, including Rory and PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan. Cannon, as a professional golfer now and as a college golfer, and as someone who I think maybe in your early 20s probably wasn't perfect, would this be something that you would ever do? And I guess secondly, how would you have handled it differently, or if you would have handled it differently, what would you have done?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely did some dumb things in my college days. I don't know if I would have done this. I don't think my social anxiety would have allowed me to yell something at Rory. I don't think Luke Potter's a bad kid. I think he probably just made a mistake in the moment. He was, you know, at TPC Sawgrass and 18th hole, big moment. And it's a cool place to be. And I know the Haight gives us practice round tickets. So he had just won, coming off a good week. He's probably feeling himself. There's a phone around. It happens, and like it just happened in a bad place at a bad time, and in today's day and age everything gets picked up on camera. So I think it's a rough situation. I'm glad he apologized. I think it's a little extra that he had to write apologies to all the people you named. I think it really wasn't that big of a deal. I think if you're a Rory too, I think this is something that, and listen, I'm not on the PGA Tour. I'm not Rory McIlroy. So I'm throwing stones at a glass house. But I do think a Tuesday, like nothing was said about his family. Nothing was said about Rory's personal life. Nothing was said about, you know, anything like that. I think it was a harmless joke that probably gets said a lot more than people think at a PGA Tour event. And it just so happened that there wasn't that many people there. And Rory was able to kind of point them out and single them out and go take his phone. And I mean, that is the risk you run on a Tuesday, or I think it was a Tuesday at the Players, and it happens. So I think he probably shouldn't have. I think the story was probably a little bit more made more than it actually was. And he was in the lineup this week, I believe, for Texas and finished 22nd or 25th. So he's playing good golf. Unfortunate that happened, but I'm sure he won't be heckling anybody again anytime soon.
Yeah, it certainly was one of those comments that I think if Rory had not reacted and gone over there and taken the phone, Luke Potter and his teammate probably don't get kicked out of the tournament. And it's probably not that big a deal. And I'm with you. This is one of those things that if this is the worst thing that Luke Potter does in his golf career, he's probably doing pretty well at the end of the day. And this is just one of those things that I think it's just maybe over the line enough to where he'll learn a lesson, he'll mature from this. And I expect big things from Texas. I mean, this is a team that did have a lot of immaturity last year. I think, you know, maybe they're still trying to rid themselves clearly of a little bit of that. But I mean, the way that Tommy Morrison's game has taken off, and he's firmly on the Walker Cup radar right now. Christian Moss, like we just said, getting this individual win. If they can just get Jack Gilbert to give them, you know, a 73 on average every time out as the fifth guy, they might be doing pretty well. So certainly something to keep an eye on as we get into these last few weeks of the regular season. Moving on to the Linger Longer Invitational, which is one that you've played quite a bit, I'm sure, in your career. Do you know what's lingering longer than maybe not? Like what's the origin behind this name? I think Berko and I address this every year that this tournament is played, but I just want to know what's lingering, and hopefully it doesn't smell.
Yeah, no, I actually don't know the name, where the name comes from. I believe this year it was played at a different golf course than where we played in the previous years. I could be wrong on
It's played at Reynolds, right?
Yeah, but something I think was going, maybe they're having like a senior PGA something, or
yeah, because there was a women's event that Western Kentucky was playing in a few weeks ago. They had to play at a different golf course too, but it's all right on property. All those golf courses are very similar, similar vibes, and the way.
Yeah, I will say, like, sorry, but man, it was one of my favorite events of the year. Like,
you guys have a host family that you stay with, right? Or that you stay
with. Yeah, we had a host family. Like, you're right on the lake. The golf course was fantastic. It was a 3-hour drive for us from Tuscaloosa. Like, I think it's something that's Alabama's going to keep playing in for a long time. And they usually have a very solid field at this event. Georgia always plays. Kennesaw State's usually pretty good. Clemson, Georgia Tech has played before. So yeah, this was an event that we always like to play. Alabama was going for their third Linger Longer Invitational in a row this year. Came up a few shots short, but yeah, shout out to Georgia for coming out with the victory this week.
And I just got a text from Jake Amos, the LSU head coach. He's just saying, we're just trying to stay under the radar, but we're struggling right now. So, clearly he likes where his team's at, but, team leaderboard from the Linger Longer, Georgia, 20 under on the final day. Coach Hack had those boys playing. They beat your Crimson Tide by a couple of shots. South Florida has had a really solid year. Steve Bradley continues to do a great job in the Tampa area. Shubham Jaglin wins individually. I think I got that right. And Grayson Wood, VCU transfer, T2 for Georgia to lead the Bulldogs. And then another transfer. I think you played with this guy, Connor Brown from Alabama. Not a recent transfer. He transferred a few years back, but finally, playing some really good golf for Coach Sewell. Nick Gross, who was my drop score pick this week, which is, for those who don't know, a fantasy league that was created by Jim Colton, who's the dad of Luke Colton. He created some this fantasy golf little game, kind of a one and done. That's on my Twitter at somewhere down the timeline. You don't have to scroll very far. There's still time to play. I think there's some prizes available as well. But Nick Gross was my drop score pick, and he tied for 28th. But I want to read these scores to you, Cannon, because you might have a name for this kind of play. But he goes 73, 66, 77. And that was a week after the hate when he went 75, 69, 79. Is there a term that you guys call that in college golf when you're that up and down?
There's not a term, but it's a five man that I want in my lineup. If I don't know if he was playing five man or not this week, but like you said about the Texas having a 73 in the five hole, like if you can have a guy who can go out and shoot 69, 66 once in a tournament, I don't really care if he shoots 75, 79, whatever it is. And I think he shot that 66 on day two, where the scores were much higher than what they were the first day and the third day. So yeah, a little bit of a roller coaster. He's a freshman, probably still trying to get his feet under him a little bit, but proud of, I'm going to be a homer. I'm proud of Nick this week and last week. But no, I don't have a name for it.
Yeah. This freshman class this year, a lot of growing pains. So he's certainly not alone, and they can't all be like Arne Svensson right now from LSU. On pace for first or at least second team All-American right now. I kind of like where Bama's at right now. Just, if Connor Brown is going to play like this, obviously we know that Dominic Clemens, good pedigree, has played well internationally, has played well at Stetson last year. Jonathan Grizz, who, knows how to win college golf tournaments, T12 for him, Jones Free, top 10. So it's not the sexiest starting lineup that I think Coach Sewell's had, but certainly could be effective as we get late into the postseason. I'm just going to run through a few quick results here on the men's side. Then we're going to zigzag over to the women's quickly, and then we'll end with one more men's event as we get into our special guest in our March Madness picks. But Arizona win the Thunderbirds Intercollegiate, which is not the Thunderbird. It's the Thunderbirds, not to be confused with ASU's tournament. They win by one over Long Beach State. Brandon Robinson from Utah gets the individual title. The Utes still trying to flirt with a top 10 ranking in the country. They're third in that event. as a team. Cincinnati wins the Johnny O. This was an exciting one. Another one-shot victory for the Bearcats over Florida Gulf Coast and Marquette. I think FGCU getting into territory now where they're not going to be on the bubble. They might be safely inside as it pertains to an at-large bid for an NCAA regional. Gunnar Bruin, individually from Kansas, only top 100 guy in the field. No surprise, he gets it done. Houston wins their home event, the All-American. Tough week for UNLV, by the way, after a strong showing at Southern Highlands. They're sixth. And then my UCF Knights. You know, you're being a homer, Cannon. I got to be a homer for UCF. This is our first win in a long time, I think since the 2022 Hartford Hawks Invitational. They win the East Carolina University Intercollegiate. So congrats to Coach Waller and the Knights on that. We're going to put our Hackler or our General Hackler Championship analysis on hold as we move over to the women's side of things. We're going to start with a match play event, which was played at probably one of the most popular new courses in Old Barnwell in South Carolina. Wake Forest goes 3-0. They beat South Carolina in the championship match. Anster Dendunnan, 3-0 for the Demon Deacons. She beats Hannah Darling in her match in the final. Carolina Shikara, 2-0-1. That includes a tie with Lottie Woad, the number one ranked amateur in the world. And then Mississippi State will take third in that with a win over Duke. They go 2-1. Good showing for Charlie Ewing's squad. Let's talk about match play events during the year and specifically match play only events. Is this something that you like? I know from a rankings perspective, it's kind of a moot point because they don't really affect your ranking all that much. And some people would say it's useless to play, you know, three matches and then go home, no stroke play. But where do you stand at this point of the season for some of the top women's teams in the country to go and just play match play?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I wish college golf did more of it. I wish they would rank it as well, because that is the driving force behind us not playing match play, is coaches don't want to take three competitive days to go play an unranked match. I thought we always did a good job at the SEC match play of doing stroke play and then match play. That way it was ranked and we got a couple reps in regards to match play. I'm sure other conferences did something similar along the way. I think match play, it's very weird for us as college golfers because we play 54 holes every week for the entire year. And then you get to the most important tournament of arguably some of these guys' lives and it's match play. And you haven't played match play, you have to get refreshed on the rules. You have to announce when it's good. You have to think strategically for match play. And it just doesn't make sense to me. It would be like, I think, basketball playing two halves and then the national championships four quarters. I don't really get it. And I'm sure there's a reason they don't rank the match play. That's above my pay grade. But I think it does need to be a ranked thing. That way you can have teams invite 12 people and you play round robin matches or something along those lines. I think Old Barnwell is a fantastic golf course from what I've heard. I haven't been there, but it's amazing that these ladies get to go play Old Barnwell, get to get match play experience. And I just wish they were getting some ranking points from the good golf that they played.
Well, we'll give you a free pass on this one because they do rank match play, but you graduated PB, which is pre-Brody. Brody does, he ranks match play, but the issue is it's only one head to head. It's only one match. And essentially it's not, if you played a bunch of them, if you played 10 or 12, that could move you up or move you down significantly in his rankings. But,
my point too is in PGA Tour University nowadays,
they don't rank
you
that,
need to right. play, you need to play the big events. You don't need to play a one-on-one match play because PGA Tour U is going to hurt you along those lines. I think the way it's set up and it's a whole different conversation that I'll have with you someday. But I wish there was a little more fair way of ranking match play because I do think it's fun to watch as a fan and it's fun to play as a player. Like it feels like you're playing an actual sport for the university that you're representing.
Yeah, I'm fine with these kind of one-off events. I think you could definitely get into too much match play, where I think it kind of gives you a false sense of how you're playing sometimes. Whereas you got a scorecard in your hand. That's some really good feedback, just in terms of where your game's at the moment. I've always advocated too for maybe more during the fall, kind of around the big football games. Would love an Iron Bowl golf match the morning before the Iron Bowl, you know, and get some alumni out there. I don't even know who. I mean, obviously JT would probably be the pick. You get JT or Dunlap out there for Alabama. And I don't know who you would put out there for Auburn. A lot of really solid players, but you know, certainly not to the level of a JT or a Nick Dunlap. So I think you guys would actually have Auburn in that scenario, even though the current college team, I would say Auburn's definitely had your guys' number. Moving to a stroke play event, not a match play event, but the Betsy Rawls, which is Texas's home event at UT Golf Club. They win by 18 over LSU. So Garrett Runyon's squad, I was not in attendance at that event. They played well, another runner-up after winning the Darius Rucker in a tiebreaker. Not a great field, but Arkansas, solid third-place finish. They get all five players inside the top 20. Individually, Lauren Kim from Texas, she wins by one at one over. I love to see the winning score at one over. You mentioned kind of some great golf courses that college golf plays, some hard golf courses. I would assume you like the one over winning score more than a 15 under, 16 under for 54 holes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always love going to Olympia Fields in the fall because five under would win. And it was a really hard test. Obviously this one was really hard as well. I think Texas won at 16 over and Arkansas finished third at 41 over. So golf course must've been playing insanely hard. Individual champion, like you said, is over par. And I think that's another good test. Like we were talking about in match play earlier, is you get into the postseason regionals, these golf courses are going to be set up hard. At least most of them are going to be set up hard, and it's good to get these tests where par is a good score as we move forward into the latter half of the spring.
Well, I'll read through a few women's results, then we'll move over to the general hackler on the men's side again. USC, speaking of match play, beats UCLA in the battle for the bell. A little bit closer than I think people would have expected. Jasmine Koo gets clipped by Adora Liu from UCLA in that match, but the Lady Trojans show why they're the best team in Los Angeles. Georgia Southern, UCF, Michigan State, 1-2-3 at the Valspar Augusta Invitational. Clara Hurtova from Texas Tech wins by three over Mary Miller from Georgia Southern. Iowa State wins in a rout at the Bama Beach Bash. And to continue maybe the run of not very creative tournament names, the spring break shootout is won by Florida Gulf Coast by seven over Illinois. So we need more creativity in these tournament names. We need more linger longers and less spring break shootout. So before we bring in our special guest, we're going to kind of break down the general hackler just real quick. We mentioned Auburn already, dominant again, second straight win for Nick Clenard and the Tigers. They went by 17 over Louisville and Cannon's brother, Cooper. Duke third by another two shots after that. And Brendan Valdez continuing to play well after missing a few weeks with that wrist injury / surgery. Proves the wrist is good. The hand is good. I think it was a top of the hand injury, as Coach Kleinard said last week on our pod. Closing 65 by Valdez. He edges Ethan Evans of Duke by a shot. And before we welcome Ethan Evans to the pod, he's currently just popping in our backstage. He's driving in the team van home to Durham from Myrtle Beach. But before we bring him on, I want to get into a little bit of a superstar discussion with you, Cannon. Some of the best individuals on the men's side, obviously Luke Clanton. We know what he's done at Florida State. Jackson Koivin from Auburn, who was just T3 at the General Hackler. He got his 19th accelerated point. He's all but guaranteed a PGA Tour card next summer if he wants it. He's going to play the Palmer Cup this summer. That's going to be the point. Or he's going to play the Walker Cup. That'll be the 2 points that he gets. This accelerated program, like, it's produced Gordon Sargent already getting his tour card. He's going to take that up this summer. Luke Clanton, we'll see him this summer on the PGA Tour. Koivin, going to be the third guy in 2 or 3 years since this program was created. I was looking, Cannon, and you might have a prediction, but I was looking. I don't I don't know when the next guy is going to be that gets to 20 points. Who should we keep an eye on just in terms of who could be the next big thing? Because I would argue you almost have to go to junior golf right now and maybe someone playing at Sage Valley this week to get to maybe the next guy who has the chance to do that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I looked for a while. I couldn't find a name that I thought screamed 20 points. I think the accelerated program has been a huge success, in my opinion. Everyone that's going to have a PGA Tour card coming from college golf, I think deservedly has done what they needed to do to have a PGA Tour card, and they're going to have a good career on the PGA Tour. So I don't have a name. I think junior golf would probably be a good call. Probably someone at Sage Valley this week.
But, Charlie Woods.
Yeah, Charlie Woods. The kid who's the young 15
Miles
year
Russell?
Old? Yeah, that kid. I think that would probably be my next pick.
He certainly has the talent. The issue, I think, with young Miles is perhaps might not play college golf that long to be able to accumulate 20 points. But yeah, looking at the current accelerated standings, behind Koivun, you have to go back to Ben James at 11. Your guy Hiroshi Tai from Georgia Tech's at 6. Tommy Morrison's at 4. The issue with those three, though, is this program ends once your junior year ends. You can't do accelerated as a senior, because at that point you're in the thick of the regular PGA Tour U rankings. And so I don't think any of those guys have put together the season right now to be able to go and get 3 points for a Hogan Award or 3 points for a Haskins. I think Luke Clanton certainly already has the Hogan locked up. But yeah, I don't, and I think this is what that program, I don't know. I think there's been a narrative recently where a lot of people say that it's almost too easy for people to get to 20 points. And I think if you go back 10, 11, 12 years, when they rolled out this program, they mentioned that only three guys in the previous decade would have gotten to 20. That was Patrick Rogers, Patrick Cantlay, and Justin Thomas. So no John Rahm, no Matt McNeely, no Jordan Spieth. Obviously, he was only a college golfer for three semesters. But this is going to be, I think, one of those things where we might not see another guy earn his tour card through this accelerated program for the next half decade, 4 or 5 years. Certainly, if you want to keep an eye on junior golfers, mentioned him earlier, Luke Colton, going to Vanderbilt, class of 2026 guy. Obviously, Miles has the talent. But again, who knew who Jackson Koivun was kind of from our position 3 years ago? Not many people. Who knew who Luke Clanton was outside of South Florida 4 or 5 years ago? So golf, things can change quickly, and it'll be interesting to keep an eye on. Well, looking at this leaderboard, Cannon, I almost called you Colton. Cannon, kind of a March Madness theme. You got Auburn played in this event, Duke played in this event. They're obviously going to be two number one seeds on the hardwood. Louisville, Baylor, Mizzou, Liberty. High Point came in at the very end of the leaderboard. They're kind of a team that I have my eye on as it relates to a potential Cinderella. But before we get into our March Madness, he's been waiting patiently for the last probably 5 minutes listening to us ramble about God knows what. But we're going to bring Ethan Evans in. Ethan, what's going on? Are you in the... You're in the team van right now, right?
I am, yes.
Is Coach Green driving? That's the question I have.
No, Coach Green actually rented a car from the airport, and Coach Hines is driving us back. So we're taking two separate cars back.
Okay, probably a good call. I could see Coach Green being a right lane, 5 under the speed limit, taking forever, but getting you there safely kind of guy.
I think you'd be surprised. He's been known to go pretty fast from time to time. Like he'll leave 10 minutes after Coach Hines and get there before him somehow. It's crazy.
What kind of a driver is Coach Sewell, Cam?
Yeah.
Sewell was, he was a fast driver, but he always got us there safe, to his credit. So.
Hopefully both hands on the wheel, except when you guys won, he'd be slurping down that milkshake with his right hand. Well, Ethan, congrats on a great individual tournament. Third place as a team too, pretty solid as well. But I want to go back to the fall, because we spoke after you won the Golf Club of Georgia Collegiate, and that win followed what, you know, many people might not know is your worst finish ever in college, T74 at Notre Dame's event. And I remember you talking about kind of how your psychology switched before that tournament. What's the progress of that now? And is that something that you're still leaning on as you continue to play this spring?
Yeah. Well, first off, thanks guys for having me on. I appreciate it. I think the main mindset thing that sort of carried me throughout last summer, which is when I feel like I first started to break out in terms of competing at the highest level, was just, you know, drawing on those past experiences where I played well against some of the best in the world and, you know, believing that I could continue to do that each time I showed up. Because I knew, you know, looking down the range at the best players, you know, they know from the first tee, the first day, that they can, you know, have a chance to win the tournament. And that's where they want to be when it comes to Sunday or whatever the final round is. So, you know, that helped me be very consistent throughout the summer. I always felt like I was in a good spot to be in contention and, you know, didn't always play my best, but, you know, sort of took that into the fall and didn't have my best season. You know, finished in the top 30, but wasn't really, you know, firing at all cylinders. And then got to Golf Club of Georgia, like you said, coming off of my worst finish where I really had to reevaluate things and, you know, couldn't blame everything on the technique, even though I kind of wanted to. I knew I was too good to be, you know, saying I finished that poorly just because my swing was in a spot where I didn't want it to be. So, you know, really tried to put in some good prep in terms of force management before Golf Club of Georgia. And then, you know, it was one of those weeks where, you know, from the first day, I just felt like my swing was in a good spot. Started to roll the putts in on those, you know, the bent greens were great. So I felt like I was rolling it and they were going in. And then just put myself in a spot the last day where, you know, things ultimately on the last couple holes went my way. I was playing with Josh Duongmini and Omar Morales, who are, you know, two good players. Josh had a great final round and unfortunately made bogey on the last to lose by one. But I was still proud of some of the shots I hit on 17 and 18 coming down the stretch. And I think that was just stemming from that belief that I sort of created in myself. And that's kind of continued into the spring.
Those are two big playing competitors in Josh and Omar. I mean, those are two guys that if you were going into a bar fight, you might want to have them as a little bit of extra muscle there. But Pepperdine's event, that was the first event of the spring. Not only a slow start for you, but a slow start for the team. What was Coach Green's message after that? And where do you feel like you guys kind of cleaned up some of the mistakes this week in terms of maybe something you struggled with over there on the West Coast?
Yeah, so that was our first time playing a tournament in January since I've been here. And I think some of the rust kind of showed, not only with our golf games, but we had a few guys that were under the weather, including myself. I actually played 9 holes in the practice round because I was just feeling pretty poor. Just wanted to make sure I had the energy to play the next day. And then Luke Sample, you know, great player for us. He had some issues with his shoulder and neck. So he was fighting it, didn't even play the practice round, was just trying to get some treatment. So it's one of those tournaments where we felt like if we were in contention to win, that would have been kind of a miracle. Obviously, we know we can play with anyone, but it was, you know, we were just really trying to get everyone healthy and have a chance to go out and put 5 guys on the course. So I think it was one of those where the coaches weren't really worried. There was no sense of panic. I could say for myself individually, there was no sort of panic. I kind of backdoored a top 20 with, you know, without my best stuff. But when you're preparing for those tournaments in Durham, when it's wet and soggy and you can't really do much outside, you got to be a little easy on yourself. And so I think just being in tournament action in the sun out in California was great for us. And then, you know, last week at the Hate, I would say it was a good performance for us down in Jacksonville. That really kind of, we got back in our zone, held each other accountable to our individual, you know, process goals. And we're able to finish second in a pretty strong field, you know, second to Texas, who had a good final round. And then this week, you know, I don't think we're too satisfied with a third place finish. Although, you know, Auburn's a great team and we felt like we could have gave them a run for their money a little bit more than we did. So, you know, kind of a little bit back to the drawing board before Floridian, which is one of our favorite tournaments, and a chance to go against a lot of the best teams in the country. So we're just going to keep building on some of the good things we've done and you know, get a really good plan for that golf course.
So Ethan, you talked about some good weeks you had and some less than good weeks you had. When you come home, I feel like it's really easy to work on things after a bad week. You kind of have a clear idea of what you want to get better at. When you come home from a good week, what does that look like for you guys? Do you regroup, talk, or is it back to work, back to grind? What does that look like for you guys?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, you know, I think for us that we have to really keep our eyes on the ultimate goal, which is, you know, winning a national championship this year. We've got a great group of guys that can really do it. And, you know, at least one of the things that I like to tell myself and we kind of talk about as a team is, you know, even certain weeks where we might win or finish second, you know, there are positives, but it's important to be honest with yourself and pretty objective. And I think a lot of these guys are not satisfied with, you know, a third place finish this week, regardless of how many positives there might be. And so not say that you look at the negatives always, but I think even when you're coming off of what you'd call a good week, you still have to look yourself in the mirror and say, did we play well enough to be a national champion this week? And I think the answer for us this year so far has been no, but that goal is still very attainable, and we're sort of making small steps as we go. And yeah, I think just realizing that you can take the positives forward, but also be very honest with yourself and acknowledge that you have room to grow to get where you want to be.
I'm from Kentucky originally. The ACC championship is going to Old Stone in Bowling Green, Kentucky this year. I believe it's the first time it's ever been there. Have you guys tried to scout that place? Do you have any knowledge of it? What does that look like for you guys? And I think you guys are going to really love playing at Old Stone.
I was thinking about that today on the course because I was playing with Sebastian Moss, and he said, you know, you guys are coming to our place for ACCs. And I asked him about the course because I didn't know anything about it. And he just said it was, you know, he said it was really good, great property. He said it was one of those properties where it seems like someone who just had a lot of money just put it all into the golf course and made a great facility and a really nice course. So he said it's a really nice place and I'm looking forward to it. But to be honest, I don't think anyone here has played it, and we're, you know, going to be kind of going in without any prior knowledge. But that's always fun to see a new place, and I think we're good at adapting quickly. You know, we've played ACCs at a different spot every year, so it's going to be a fun challenge. And I think with the 8 teams going to match play this year instead of 4, it's going to be pretty exciting, no matter how it works out. So we're looking forward to that for sure.
Ethan, people always kind of talk about the academic schools, you know, Duke, UNC, you know, teams that actually do school. I'm like, you know, maybe some other schools that people on this podcast, including myself, maybe aren't accustomed to. But what are some of the unique challenges to being a student athlete at a place like Duke, and maybe something as it pertains to golf that people don't realize is actually more difficult than if you were someplace where there wasn't as many demands academically?
Yeah, I won't lie, it can be a challenge sometimes. I always tell people it's a lot more manageable than you would think. But at the same time, I feel like we all have to be pretty smart about our time management, which is pretty cliche. But I feel like, you know, there's certain stretches during the semester where you really just have to bear down. There's usually a midterm sort of time in, you know, March that we've luckily kind of just passed here before spring break, where it's, you know, you might have 2 or 3 midterms or an essay due, and you're getting ready for these golf tournaments. So it becomes a lot. But you just got to realize that, you know, 3 or 4 days of really hard work in a spot where you're done with all the stuff you need to do. So obviously, you know, all the guys in this family want to play pro golf, and so that's kind of the end goal. But we kind of chose to take on the challenge of academics as well. And I think each of us kind of embraced that in a way. I think we wouldn't want to have it any other way. But it does get tough at times, for sure. And you got to make sure that you give yourself that time to play golf and be able to prep for those tournaments. And so saving stuff till the very, very last minute where you're not getting sleep doesn't usually work, even though it can be necessary sometimes. So, yeah, I think you just got to be ready for those times where it hits you pretty hard. And then the rest of it is very manageable. As long as you just do a little bit here and there on the road, you know, you can get by.
So luckily during the summer, you probably don't have to worry about school as much. And, you know, you're going to have a pretty important summer, I think, as it pertains to a particular event in September at Cypress Point. Where is the Walker Cup right now on your radar? You're ranked 44th in the World Amateur Golf Rankings. I think I did the math of the guys who are not graduating and turning pro. You're right around the 15th or 16th American. Where do you feel like your chances are right now? And have you allowed yourself to dream a little bit about that?
I definitely have. I have that list kind of mapped out in my notes app. So it's funny you say that. I think looking at Cypress Point, it's, you know, not only a special place, but I've been to Monterey so many times in my life, and it's just an amazing place, especially being from the West Coast. So I think being able to represent the U.S. would be an amazing thing. But, you know, it is pretty far in the future, and I know that just putting in hard work every day is all I can do, and really just trying to do what I can for this team. Because, you know, the short-term goal, which is more important, is winning a national championship. So all the tournaments coming up right now are college events, some really good fields. So it's each week's an opportunity to, you know, hopefully prove something to other people, but really just prove something to, you know, the other teams in college golf that we're the real deal. And the best way to do that is for me to do my part and try to go win each week. So that's really what my sight's on. But yes, I definitely do dream. And that's kind of what I think about when I'm, you know, in the gym or doing long range sessions and stuff like that. That's what gets you going.
Well, hopefully part of your workout includes maybe playing a little pickup basketball if that's allowed, if Coach Green allows that. He doesn't want you guys getting hurt. But the reason that we wanted you on the podcast this week, and one, you played some excellent golf, but before you even teed off this week, I kind of tabbed you as someone who I thought knew a little bit of ball, went to a institution that knew a lot about ball in Duke, and then you go and play well. So it's almost like I kind of spoke this week for you into existence. So you're welcome for that. But secondly, March Madness around the corner. Have you filled your bracket out yet? Or are you prepared to talk a little bit of March Madness?
I would say I'm pretty prepared. I filled out a bracket probably 30 minutes after they came out. So I was pretty locked in. We had a team dinner at a seafood restaurant kind of close to the golf course, and I felt kind of bad. I didn't really like say anything to anyone. I just grinded out my bracket, but that's kind of how it is this time of year. It's always fun to, when it first drops, you just kind of go with all your gut calls and sorry, I got some guys laughing at me here, but yeah, I think it's the best time of year. I think March Madness leading into the Masters is like what I always look forward to. But I think especially having Duke as a team where I truly believe they can win this year is really cool. Like past 2 years, I didn't pick them to go all the way, and people kind of made fun of me for that. But I feel like you gotta try to win your pool. And I think that's the most important thing. And so this year, I think, you know, picking Duke is legit, and I'm excited to root for them. And it's going to be a great tournament. There's some great teams, including Alabama, where I know you went, Cannon. They're going to be a dangerous team, and Duke might have to get past them at some point. So I just can't wait.
So we're going to go around the horn a little bit. A little bit of a audio delay just in terms of us all being in three different spots, and Ethan currently traveling at probably about 70 miles per hour right now. So we're going to do a little bit more structured kind of around the horn. Pick to win. Obviously, Ethan, we know you're going with Duke. How's Cooper's ankle? How's Mr. Flag? Is he back to practice? Have you heard?
Oh, I wish I could tell you. I think there's some good news that's coming out, but there is rumors that, you know, it might not be the best thing for him to go in the first round, which they won the ACC tournament without him. So there's no reason they can't beat a 16 seed. But at the same time, you know, it's good to, anything can happen in March, and it's good to get in a rhythm where you have all the guys playing together, because just one bad game and you're out. So it's going to be a tough decision for Shire and the training staff. They're going to have to figure out what the best plan is. But I think we kind of realized how much we needed Cooper on the floor, because we, you know, the ACC championship, every game was so close, and we were just having to grind it out, versus, you know, our conference play throughout the year was just a lot of blowouts, to be quite honest. So I'm just excited for him to hopefully get back and be healthy. And he's super tough, so I don't quite question whether he, you know, is going to get out there as fast as he can.
Cannon, pick to win. Are you going Duke too? You're going with Alabama. Okay.
Well, I think Alabama's in the East region. They're the 2 seed, 25-win season, again, under Nate Oates. Sears is averaging 19 a game. He's got 5 assists. He's shooting 50% from the field.
Proctor might shut him down. Boards.
What?
You think Proctor might shut him down a little bit with the length?
No, I don't think so. And I think if we do see Duke in the Elite Eight, or I believe it's the Elite Eight.
Yeah, it'll be Elite Eight.
Yeah, we have a forward in Nelson that I believe can guard Flag, and he's not a scorer anyway. So if we don't get offensive production from Nelson in that game, I'm not super worried. I was more confident about the Alabama team of last year than I am of this year, but I am an Alabama homer and I am picking Alabama to win it all.
I actually like the Alabama pick to beat Duke, just because as Ethan was saying, he finally feels comfortable picking Duke to win it all. I think if you look at the public is all over Duke. So you could either go down with the ship and you're not really gain a lot by picking Duke to win it all, or you can zag a little bit and go with an Alabama, go with a Houston maybe to get into the championship game from that right side of the bracket. I actually like a team from the left side of the bracket, and that's the Florida Gators. It's not the Auburn Tigers. I don't think Auburn has the ball handlers if it gets into kind of crunch time, and if you're trying to force it down into Broome, and you know you're playing a team that's firing on all cylinders and has size inside, I think it'll be hard to kind of win a close game, or even maybe, you know, if they're down a little bit, try to make up that gap. But I like Florida a lot. I think they have probably the best guard group in the country. They got some good bigs. You get Handlocked in back, which was kind of a bonus after he broke his leg last year in the SEC final. So I think they have a lot of like a lot of pieces. Walter Clayton Jr. can light it up. He might be a star of the tournament. So I'm going with Florida.
You know, the only one seed I actually don't have going to the Final Four is Florida.
Wow.
But I wouldn't say they're overrated. I originally had Florida Duke in the final. After some thought, I felt like, you know, I needed some sort of team I could ride that would go against kind of the chalk.
I feel like we're going to see more chalk here than usual. Most overrated team. Let's go Cannon first. Who is the most overseeded, overrated team that could potentially be packing their bags on Thursday or Friday?
Well, so I think, like you said, the chalk is there. I think the good teams are good, the bad teams are bad. I actually had, because you posed this question to me, I had Memphis as the overseeded team. I don't think Memphis is that good. They've beaten UTSA by 5, Wichita State by 3, and Tulane by 1, all in the month of March. They're a 5 seed. Louisville's an 8 seed. Louisville just played in the ACC championship game. Clemson got the 5 seed. The only really good win I think Clemson has is over Duke. And I believe that game was at Clemson. Clemson also beat Kentucky at Clemson. I don't think that was a super great Kentucky team that they beat early on in the season. I don't think there's, you know, a team that's a 1 seed that shouldn't be. But I do see Memphis as the 5 seed being a little too high of a seed, especially when you pair it with UNC getting into the tournament and Louisville at an 8 seed. So I think it was a little all over the place in the latter half of the rankings.
Yeah, plus Memphis got an absolute gift in the semifinals of the American Conference Championship. One of the most egregious non-foul calls I think I've ever seen, with PJ Hegarty just like running through the guy from Tulane, their best player. I forget what his name is, but it's like a semi-loose ball and just went right over his back and almost tackled the guy. But Ethan, most overrated team, besides potentially Florida, because you don't have them going to the Final Four. But who I guess besides Florida would be most overrated?
I actually agree with what Cannon was saying about Memphis. I think looking at their first round matchup against Colorado State, I mean, they're right now, I'm seeing Colorado State's a favorite by I think it's 3.5, which is pretty rare for a 12-5 matchup. And I think that kind of proves that Memphis hasn't really put together a resume that's too scary to a lot of teams. The two teams I'm watching, honestly, are Michigan State and St. John's as two seeds, because they're not in the SEC, but they're, you know, I think especially Michigan State is getting a lot of hype from a lot of people as, you know, potential Final Four candidates. And I honestly don't see it. I don't think the Big Ten is anywhere as strong as the SEC. And I think even, you know, the best team from the Big Ten, Michigan State, I really, you know, they don't have anyone averaging more than 13 points a game. You know, they might be a well-rounded team, obviously well-coached. You know, Izzo has a lot of experience, but to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if they got bounced in the second or third round and messed up a lot of people's brackets. And St. John's is a team that, you know, I'm honestly going to be pulling for in the tournament, just because I think it's a great story with Rick Pitino and what he's done there. And I think any team that, you know, plays in Madison Square Garden, you know, as their home floor, would be a great team for America to see go pretty far. So, you know, I think those are the two teams that I question their seeding a little bit. As two seeds, there's going to be a lot of pressure on them, and I don't know if they're going to be able to live up to it. But I do think all the one seeds are, you know, very well earned. Even Houston, I think Houston's a great team. We haven't mentioned them yet, but they're a great team. So, I'm really watching those two seeds that aren't in the SEC and see how they're going to do.
Yeah, I actually think Houston, for those who want to go kind of against the public and a champion that has a lot of value and actually has good odds to win, Houston might be a team that you want to pick to kind of win it all, just in terms of the leverage that you'll get by picking them, you know, comparatively to picking a Duke. I think my most overrated team, I'll stay in the Big Ten. I think it's Michigan. Anytime teams get hot late in the year and they win their conference title, I know Dusty May has like done a great job in year one, but something about like this team wasn't very good before the Big Ten tournament. And just because they won three games or however many games they won, three or four games, I don't think changes that much. They turn the ball over a lot. I think they're 328th in the nation in turnovers, which might be last. I don't know how many teams there are in D1, but that's pretty close to being last. So I don't like Michigan. I don't like a lot of the five seeds, and I know that's the trendy pick is the 12 over the five, but the 13 over the four has become in recent years the new 12 over the five. So I think the 12 seeds kind of get back into their groove. I mean, you mentioned Colorado State. They might be one of the hottest teams in the country. You see San Diego obviously plays Michigan. I love Liberty. And I know I'm kind of jumping the gun here and doing Cinderella's, but I really like Liberty just based on how they play. I don't know if you guys have seen them play much, but they don't really run like offensive plays. They just are in constant motion, and they kind of take what the defense gives them. And so it's real interesting to watch them play. I think Oregon could have a lot of trouble with them. But so that's my Cinderella. I love Liberty. I love High Point. I watched them kind of make their run in the Big South Championship. I started doing a conference championship pool this year, and it was interesting. I had them as my 15th and highest rated confidence. So I'm all on High Point. But we'll kick it back to Ethan. Who's your Cinderella that you have, you know, winning two games or potentially more?
Yeah, so I like your Liberty call. I actually have Liberty winning two games, I believe, because I have Liberty and Akron both winning in that section and then playing each other in the next round. I think I'm a little bit anti-Big Ten in this tournament. I just feel like the SEC is so much better, and so the seeds are probably going to show that. And I think Michigan, I also have UC San Diego beating Michigan. I agree that they're pretty overrated and kind of just, they've just come into form recently, but they're very beatable. I also have, I know this sounds a little crazy, I also have Drake winning two games. I think they're going to pull. I believe it's Texas Tech who they're going to play in the second. Yeah, I mean, they're 30-3. They know how to win games. And I remember watching them way back in the beginning of the season. I think it was in Hawaii or Atlantis. And they just looked really well coached all around. And they were just playing a good brand of basketball. and they've looking at their resume, they have some pretty impressive wins. So I feel like they're a team that they know how to win. They've done it all year, and so they're not going to be afraid of anyone in the tournament. I would say the last thing, I mentioned this to you before, but Maryland as a 4 seed might not be a Cinderella, but I think they have a chance to go pretty deep in the tournament. You know, beating Florida is obviously the toughest challenge. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I have it in my bracket. I think just the combination of Derek Queen on the inside, who's going to be a lottery pick, great player, freshman on the inside, along with another good forward that they have. And then they have three experienced guards on the outside. I think Gillespie and Rodney Rice, great players. And Brian Kim, my team, is a big Maryland fan, so I might, you know, try to ride the Terrapins with him. I looked at them and I just kind of had a feeling that they were going to go far. So sometimes you just got to go for it, but very well could be wrong. But those are kind of my gut shots.
I think we picked all the Cinderellas. There's none left over for Cannon. Who are you doubling down on with us to convince everyone else to pick? Who's your?
Well, so you're wrong. There is a Cinderella left, and it's a Will Wade coached McNeese State.
Okay, who I got on this show. I forgot about McNeese.
I got on this show last year and did the same spiel about Will Wade and how he's a winner and might not be the best guy in the world, but he is a winner. McNeese State won 30 games in 2023-2024. They won 19 conference games this year, 27-6. I have them beating that Clemson team that I was talking about earlier in the first round. I have them beating Purdue in the second round. And then I have them beating Houston in the Sweet 16 after a Jawan Roberts bad game, coming back from injury. It's going to happen. Will Wade's going to do it for me. And I'm going to have McNeese State in the Elite Eight.
I certainly could see them beating Clemson, although I feel like one ACC team has to play well other than Duke, just because of how much everyone is just, you know, crapping all over that conference. I mean, clearly in a down year, but, you know, normally when these types of narratives take hold, you at least have someone that kind of stands up and says, you know, nah. And so I think Clemson could be that. I do like McNeese. Picking them to beat Houston, it could backfire, but you could also be looking brilliant. But I just feel like you know, they haven't played anyone like LJ Cryer, and normally when you have a guard like that, you're going to go pretty far. And Houston, I think, is owed some too, just because, was it like 2 years ago, who was the guard they had who got hurt, and like, just they had some really bad like injury luck, and
they just seem to always
Marcus Sasser.
Yeah, he like had a hamstring injury and he tried to play. And that's the worst thing too, is when you have a star, and maybe this could be Cooper a little bit too for Duke, but although I think he'll be fine. But normally you almost want a guy to be out. Like if he's going to be hurt, like you just want him to be out, because it's almost a detriment to have, you know, someone play at 65% or 70%, especially this time of the year. So let's, real quick to close, we're over the hour mark, and let's just spin through our Elite Eights, Final Four, and championship, just so we can kind of keep track. I'll keep a record, and then whoever wins, we'll kind of work out something. So, Cannon, we'll go with you first. Let's spin through your bracket, starting with the top left.
I have Michigan State beating Auburn, Florida beating St. John's, Alabama beating Duke in a really close game. And then Tennessee beating Houston. And then Florida beating Michigan State, Alabama beating Tennessee, and then an all SEC matchup in Alabama and Florida in the national championship, which I have Alabama winning.
Ooh, I mean, that could happen. I don't like picking two teams from the same conference, but if there's a year, I think it's the SEC getting 14 bids. Yeah. The odds are certainly in their favor. Ethan, are you similar to Cannon, or are we actually going to have some suspense as we get into next weekend?
I'm not too similar, actually. I do like the SEC, but I have Auburn, Ole Miss in the top region playing each other. And then I have Maryland and Kansas, which, you know, 4-7 is always a tough pick. It can backfire on you for sure, but I feel like Kansas is one team we didn't talk about. It's not flawed at all this year, but has all the pieces to beat anyone. And then I have Duke, Alabama as well. I think that'll be a great game, but I think Duke will move on to the final where I have them winning. And then I have Houston, Kentucky in the bottom where I have Houston winning. So then I'll have Auburn, Maryland, Duke, and Houston in the final four. I think Auburn takes care of Maryland and goes to the final. And then I think Duke, Houston could have a chance to be the game of the year. But I think the Blue Devils will pull it off. And then I think a Duke-Auburn rematch in the final is what's going to happen. And Duke's already beat them once, so I think they can do it again, even though I'm sure it'll be a great game. Acting like I know this is going to happen, which it might not. But, yeah, that's what I got.
So that could be the national championship matchup in men's golf, too, here in 2 months, Auburn versus Duke.
You're right. I was thinking that today on the course.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I don't like to pick too many one seeds, but again, it just ends up happening. It feels like I have like six brackets already, but I like to fill some out for like my kids, and we enter my wife's work pool, and just something fun to do. But this is like my official bracket. I have Auburn over Iowa State. I'm a little bit worried because Iowa State's a little bit banged up. I think they just lost their second leading scorer, so that worries me just a little bit. But again, I think other than maybe Cam Jones and Marquette, there's not really a player that I really fear in that part of the bracket. So I think Iowa State kind of just gets there by default. But Auburn beats them. They're in the Final Four. I have Florida Florida over Texas Tech, even though I really like Texas Tech, and I almost went with them. And then Houston over Tennessee, that's kind of super chalk, and Alabama over Duke. And then Houston versus Florida, and Florida beating Houston, which is super chalk, but I feel like you can't go wrong. I got to go with the Gators. This is the best team I think I've seen out of them in like 11 years, like that 2014 team that had like Patrick Young and Scotty Wilbekin, that was a legit team. And then they ran into a UConn team that just shot the ball better than them in the Final Four. So, I think I'm with Ethan. This is my favorite time of the year when you have March Madness. The championship game's always the Monday of the Masters. You roll into the Masters, then you get like the Kentucky Derby. Then you get the NBA playoffs, and baseball starting too, like right now. So, I feel like it's a great time of year. Well, Ethan, thanks for joining us. Again, congrats on the stellar play. And I think even more impressive maybe than your play has been your basketball knowledge and analysis. And I know you didn't have a laminated sheet of notes like Cannon did, because he had all day to prepare for this. So super impressive. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Always fun talking basketball, and good to see you, Brentley. Good to see you, Cannon. Take care, guys.
Hey, dude. Great talking.
All right, Cannon. So no McNeese in the Final Four. What do you think our friendly wager should be? Between us three, we'll just count it from, Elite Eight on, because we didn't want to go through everyone's first round picks and things of that nature. Yes. But what do you think is a good non-monetary legal thing for the winner, or maybe punishment for the person who finishes with the least amount of points?
I think loser has to make 50 free throws at their local gym in a row, and you can't leave the gym until you make 50 in a row.
No, I would be there all night. How about this? Loser has to go shoot free throws. They have to shoot 50 free throws, and they have to post, not the video. That would be a really long video, but there will have to be video evidence, and then it will be recorded, and you have to post your percentage for the world to see. I think that's good for the loser. You know what? How about this? The two people who lose have to go do that, and then the person who wins doesn't have to. I think that's pretty fair.
Okay, that's cool. I would like to say I do like McNeese State going to the Sweet 16. I don't think they're making an Elite Eight. I don't think they're making a Final Four. But I do think this year is going to be a great March Madness. And I think St. John's really has a chance of making a Final Four this year.
Yeah, the thing that worries me about St. John's, I mean, obviously well coached with Patino. They have some NBA guys on their teams, on their team as well. I don't know. I don't quite buy into them going all the way like so soon. I mean, they just won the Big East for the first time since what, like 2000 or something like that. Yeah. So it's been a long time. Typically teams don't just come out of nowhere and do this. You know, even someone like UConn, you know, who was really good up and down, you know, had some great NBA players back in the day. Like they've kind of been in and out and been there, done that. I don't quite think St. John's has the experience to kind of pull something off like that. Well, Cannon, we had a ton of, and I guess it's a pretty prototypical March Madness in that we had a ton of technical issues. You're recording this from a bathroom. Ethan was in a team van traveling along, you know, whatever even numbered interstate. Too bad Burko's not on. He would know off the top of his head. So to our listeners, our loyal listeners, hopefully, you know, I can work my editing magic, but I think the content was good. And we appreciate Cannon coming on. What's next for you, Cannon? What's your next tournament?
Yeah, so I go to Argentina on Saturday, the start of the Latin tour. So catching a layover flight in Chile and then on to Santiago, or then on to Argentina, and we're down there for 6 weeks. So appreciate you having me on. I hope your listeners don't hate me after this. I'm definitely the fill-in this week, but I had a blast with you guys, and I hope to be back on sometime soon.
Well, the great thing about our listeners is that there's not a mean bone in anyone's body. So we're a loving bunch. College Golf Book, I think, is the de facto president of the College Golf Talk fan club. He certainly is a super nice guy. And yeah, so no one's going to hate you. We are going to be, you know, praying that you make it down to Argentina and you don't get bit by any mosquitoes. I've heard those are bad this time of year. So bring your mosquito repellent and play some good golf. Bring it home. Hopefully this podcast has been known to have maybe the negative effect of a podcast bump, and that we had Cohen Trolio on a few weeks ago, and he has not been playing his best golf since he's been on this podcast. So hopefully you can buck the trend a little bit. I have faith in you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I made 2 of 10 cuts in Canada, so I don't think it's the podcast's fault. I'll be just fine. And if not, I'll just come do another podcast with you, Brentley. But
hey, the seat's always open during this time of year for your basketball advice. Although I will say, if Ethan wants to come back next year as well, we can certainly use his analysis as well. I feel like we probably provided more insight on basketball than we did golf this podcast. But again, this is College Golf Talk. We're only a semi-serious podcast. And again, we appreciate all of our loyal listeners. We couldn't do it without you. And for Brentley, not Burko, but Cannon, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.